Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
How is everybody?
Good.
Good.
Awake.
Awake. Hooray.
Yes.
I know these...
Conscious.
These episodes go out at 8 a.m. on Mondays, but we record them after 8 p.m. on Wednesdays. And so right now it's 9:15 and we're all kind of dragging. I got up early today because I have an office guest for today, tomorrow, and Friday. I am dog sitting a friend's 9-month-old golden doodle.
Oh, boy. Yes.
And but this dog gets dropped off at my office at 7 a.m. But I don't get in. I normally don't get until like 10 or 11:30, but I've been getting in earlier so the dog is not alone in my office. Mm-hmm. But he's the sweetest dog, and it's nice having a dog as company.
But you have to get up really early.
But I got to get up early to make sure that he doesn't wreak havoc no more so than I do. Hey, friends, let's talk about the latest news. And something I saw on the internets is that the website Comics Alliance is closing.
Yeah.
Do we use that, right? That's a resource.
Not for a while for me.
Yeah.
Some of those bigger sites, Comics Alliance, and Newsarama and comic book resources.
Yeah.
They're kind of drowning in ads and clickbait and stuff now. And I just kind of don't need them anymore.
It's funny.
It's what people need to stay alive, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
And that doesn't even always work.
It's funny you mention that because in the break before we started recording, I was just loading all the links I sent you, and
they started.
It was comic. I was like Bleeding Cool, which is the story.
Yeah.
Which tab do I have that's playing an ad not right now?
Yeah.
Whack-a-mole to turn everything off.
Yep.
Yeah, I kind of hate Bleeding Cool just for that. It's they're always the worst for me.
So, yeah. But I had no idea that Comics Alliance was owned by AOL.
Yeah, so. That was something I learned through the article.
Yeah.
I hadn't known that either.
What's AOL?
Kidding.
Totally kidding. Yeah, that. I remember when I moved to Washington like 17 years ago, we all, you know, you went to your mailbox and you got a disc from America Online.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And for a long time, that's how I always got on the web, was I put my disc back in and that dial-up sound. I do not miss that sound. I do not miss that sound.
Yeah, it's AOL is one of those. Every once in a while, I'll see somebody still has their AOL email address. And I'm like, what decade are you living in?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, well. I technically have one. There's probably like 3,000 things in the inbox.
That's how they'll survive the when the machines take over, because machines will overlook that one. It'll be kind of like the Battlestar Galactica. It's just like, it's analog. We're free. We're good. You know?
Yeah, the technology is too outdated. We can't even access it to take over it. So Comics Alliance is closing. What else is in there? I guess that's not really.
I don't know. I mean, it just looks like it's closed down, and somebody, Andrew Wheeler, was quoted in there as saying like the writers are really good. Hopefully, people will pick them up, or who knows? Like it's traded hands a couple times. Maybe somebody else will pick it up and revive it. So.
I've noticed a lot of the journalists have moved on to getting some comic jobs here and there, too. Mm-hmm. So it feels like, not going to say they have safety nets, but they're at least got momentum elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because, some of them have been working for Marvel as of late. So it's like, you're not doing too terrible then. Okay.
Yeah, no, cool. So that works, because that was part of the quote, too. Like, maybe they'll move on to comics as well. And so some have. So hopefully everyone will be able to bounce back from this for their own jobs and security and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, and moving on, the Deadpool / Logan effect is taking hold. Watchmen is now slated to get an R-rated animated movie.
Well,
R-rated animated.
Should be. A lot of the DC stuff that's rolled out in the last, 4 or 5 years have actually not been very kid-friendly.
Yeah. Not
thrown,
at all.
Like,
no.
F and S bombs and
well,
stuff
just
like
the,
that.
Well, just the violence is so
and,
excessive,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so, I mean, they haven't really been...
And I remember when HBO did Spawn. I thought that was R-rated.
It was darn close. If it wasn't PG-13, it was R-rated.
So I don't know what that means anymore as far as does this matter. Because, I mean, Watchmen's a little oversaturated again now.
Right.
So it's just like, now we get to see it animated.
The thing is, there was an animated sequence that was supposed to be in the original Zack Snyder film that you can get separately, which was the black...
the pirate.
Frigate? The black, what was it?
Frigate, I think that's right.
Yeah, so it was an animated version of the pirate.
It was the comic within the comic within the comic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that would have made that and the biographical story of the original Minutemen would have made it a six-hour film.
Yeah,
but they still shot all that stuff. But they didn't put it as extras, at least not to my knowledge, as extras on the original disc. No, they released them as separate DVDs. And I think it's the Black Frigate.
That sounds right, but whatever.
That was actually quite good, and it was a very straight adaptation of the comic within the comic. So you know, if it's going to be more of that sort of thing, then that's cool. But you know, I'm kind of, when are we going to stop going to the Watchmen well? When are we going to be done with it?
Hard now.
Yeah, I don't understand why, other than this is a thing that we consider highbrow in literature. But you know, I talk to people, and not only are they sick of Watchmen, but they don't like it. The people from my era thought it was a tremendous work of literature, but younger folks, it's kind of like convincing younger people that Catcher in the Rye is a decent piece of literature, because it's like, no, it's not. It doesn't speak to me. It doesn't speak to my world. Leave me alone. You're old and you're boring. And that's kind of what I'm hearing about Watchmen.
I never liked Catcher in the Rye, and yeah. I don't think you're old or boring, but I just didn't like it.
But it spoke to me when I was of an age, mm-hmm. and it does. And I went back, and there was, let me rephrase that, but there was a great article in like the New Yorker or something like that about 7-8 years ago about how school districts were gonna, you know, literature teachers were feeling foolish, or that they discovered that having kids read Catcher in the Rye was a waste of time because it doesn't speak to them. And initially it was like, oh, these snot-nosed kids. And I read the article and I thought, I went back and I read the book after 30 years plus years, and I'm like, it doesn't speak to me anymore. It's about a white, privileged young man who is just a little bit too angsty for his own good, and I get the point, but the point doesn't have any value for me. So, and I'm kind of wondering why we keep going back to the Watchmen well for the similar reasons.
Because it still makes money.
Yeah,
but people are tired of it.
I feel like there are like new generations that are finding the Watchmen. I mean, we still have people coming and looking for it as something, you know, that has been recommended to them. But I think the oversaturation point is really happening. And so, sure, there's going to be an animated one. It's going to be rated R. I think it should be rated R.
Of course it should.
And,
but it should also be 6 hours long if you want to cover the whole story. It's still going to be terribly truncated, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
We're only at the early points of them really talking about it. Because this was supposed to be like a DNC, whatever. Do not... It wasn't supposed to be released at all.
Oh.
A DNR did not release.
Yeah, this was supposed to be all DNR. And because I think they were running it through test audiences, like, is this a thing you might want to watch?
No,
and so it sounded like somebody just leaked it out ahead of time.
So it may not actually be a thing. It may be just an idea thing.
Well, it's closer to being a thing than not a thing, because, as you know, DC is moving Watchmen characters into the Rebirth universe, and so they're going to want to make as much money off of it as possible.
It's like central to this whole relaunch.
Yeah.
Well, and people were questioning about, like, wow, that's interesting that this got released and all that, but it's just like, yeah, are you sure that was, like, unintentionally released or not? Because this week is actually the start of the Button story, or 2 weeks in the past when you're listening to this, dear readers. So the Button story is full Watchmen now. So for them to accidentally release the information of the R-rated cartoon, it's like, right.
Well, isn't that convenient? Right.
Pull my other leg.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's funny how much Alan Moore hates all of these adaptations. He says he'd be spitting venom all over any Snyder directed film, Gibbons participated in the in the 2009 movie. One last question for you: the people who come in and who ask for Watchmen, do they strike you as new readers?
Some of them do.
Yeah.
Yes, some of them, it seems like, you know, oh, my friend who reads some comics, he really likes Alan Moore, and he said I should read Watchmen.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of thing. Or V for Vendetta is another one. And they both have had theatrical releases, so I don't know if that helps anything at all. But
Yeah, I
not all the time, but I think usually it's some people getting it because their friend recommended it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like Watchmen sounds like one of those comics that's just an entry point for people.
It can be.
So for hardcore crusties like us.
Well, I feel like it's a huge endeavor to take on really any Alan Moore created situation because his stuff is always so dense.
Yeah. Right.
That I feel like it's just hard to translate it in the model that they currently have. Mm-hmm. You know.
Every package of a DVD should come with its own shaman. And
well, I mean, how much would you have to sit That's through right. and what dimensions do you need to travel through yes, while exactly. you're doing it? So
if you have some time, go back and listen to the podcast episode where Chris goes, does a deep dive into Alan Moore's Providence and shares his theory about that it's all just a shamanic ritual to read the comic.
Interesting note, we're not dead.
Right. Because 12 already came out. It just finished. So, yes. You know. Yeah.
Oh, is that the last one?
Yep, that's the last one.
Okay. Yeah. Oh.
I was a little disappointed that
maybe
morning.
It's a slow-acting cultural poison.
Could be.
Yeah. I mean, you're...
it's venom, like we said. Yeah. He likes to inject venom.
Well,
so.
I can't remember what happens. Do we devolve? Do we join with... the hive mind of Thulu. What
we
do we
just
do?
Live in conjunction with the splendor and terror of the old ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I noticed that your canines are getting a little bit extended, and you have that greasy, oily, greenish pallor to your skin. Oh. Makes you all the more handsome, though. I must say.
Thank you. The tentacles will come in handy.
Yes. See, I think he's playing the long game here.
Yeah.
All right.
And on that note.
And moving on. And Cole, I put this story in for you. Last year. Not the one we just talked about. The one I'm bringing up. Last year, comics legend Mike Mignola announced he'd be taking a break from the world of comics after his poignant end to his work on Hellboy and Hell. Well, consider that break over.
Sure.
For now, because he's teaming up with Hell in a Crash artist Warwick Johnson Cadwell for a new graphic novel. Going to be about vampires, I guess.
Well, there's a brand new one that just came out today, the Hellboy one that he did with Johnny.
So I think maybe his break is just on art.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because Johnny is... Who's Michael Gianni? What's his name?
Gary Gianni?
Gary Gianni.
Gary Gianni.
Yeah. Who is an artist that you see sporadically anyway. Yeah. So, I think he's taken a step back from drawing... but he's always written the BPRD book, right?
Scripted. Plotted.
Plotted, yeah.
Because Arcudi tends to do the full scripts,
right,
I think.
Right.
Yeah, or did.
I'm perfectly happy. I think he's a great storyteller, but of course I miss his artwork because I think his artwork is outstanding.
So. Well, and I was trying to find a Helena Crash to show you the art.
Uh-huh.
Their art is like... really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it might be a good pairing or it could be really bad. Because it's just very odd proportions. It's kind of like Picasso paintings of
Cubist.
Like humans. It's kind of weird.
No, this is this the woman who's, is she drawing the...
I don't know if it's a woman or not. It's like... Oh, Wayland, I don't know. Or something. Oh, is the person, so I don't know if it's
so
a woman.
So this is the person drawing the vampire
yes.
story?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I find the most interesting about this, because it could be like a hot mess. I don't know. Because I'm not a real big fan of the art.
All right.
So I don't know. It could work really well because Mignola's work is very interesting.
Very and distinct.
Very edgy and like literal edges, you know, sharp edges and stuff. So it might work really well. I don't know.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. We shall see.
Are you, as far as Mignola is concerned, are you all in on anything he does?
No, I'm not. In fact, like BPRD, I gave up reading that as a monthly title because the plot, the stories are so slow.
Yeah.
And then I get them from the library in the collected editions, and I'm perfectly satisfied. But, you know, I'm to a point in my life where it's like I don't need to buy these and keep them around. But you know, with my slowly disintegrating memory core, I was trying to pick up on the BPRD trades, and I just reread two that I read 3 years ago. Mm. It wasn't until I got to the last of the third book, I'm like, wait, I think that, oh, shoot. I really need to keep a spreadsheet of what I've been reading, and I hate to admit that, but I'm at that point.
Dude, spreadsheets are awesome. What are you talking about?
I have a comic journal.
It's you know, a comic journal would be cool.
You know, just a good composition notebook.
When I was a little boy, I remember my grandma and grandpa, whenever they take walks on the beach or go fishing, grandma had a journal. It was her bird journal. And the main reason she started keeping a bird journal is because she and grandpa would bicker so much about what they actually saw. So Francis was going to have the final say on what birds they saw. And as a little boy, I just thought, oh, that's just terrible. And now I'm like, I get grandma now.
Well, actually, that's actually that's pretty clever, because what you can do is you can start a blog, and you don't have to like write full reviews of comics that you read, but you can tag comics, so you can like click on the tag saying, oh, what of Mignola's have I read already? Click on it, and it'll just show you a list of all the comics you've written.
I need to write an article for AARP.
Are you going to help him organize that spreadsheet then?
Oh, God, no. It's on his own.
He already dinged me at the live show about getting rid of the bed in my spare room so I can make more room for more comics, which I thought was a really... And his kicker to the joke was, what do you mean you actually have a spare bedroom in Seattle?
Right.
That was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's great. Yeah. Anyway, so look for Mignola Pen Vampires. The Hugo Award nominations have come out, and they include Best Graphic Story. And a number of favorites are actually nominated for these Hugo Awards. Monstrous Volume 1, Awakening, from Marjorie Liu and illustrated by Sena Takeda. Mm-hmm. And Black Panther Volume 1 from Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yep.
So Brian K. Vaughan is on the list a number of times as well.
It pretty much, it's a lot of like duh, duh, yep, duh.
So you're saying Hugo Awards are on point. There's
it
no surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. What were the Vaughan books that were?
Paper Girls, Volume 1. Saga, Volume 6.
Of course. Duh.
And I think that's it for Ms. Marvel from G. Willow Wilson is on their Volume 5. Mm-hmm. And the only other one we haven't mentioned is The Vision Volume 1, Little Worse Than a Man, written by Tom King.
Yep.
Love that book
from
so
Marvel.
Much. So much.
Cool.
So,
yeah.
Very good. Very good snapshot of what were our best sellers in the store last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those were all on the top 10 list or so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
All right. And finally, friends, let's talk about a controversy that has wrecked the comics industry.
Woo!
We all know what we're talking about. So there's this artist for X-Men Gold number 1, Ardian Siaf, and I am butchering the pronunciation of his name. Yep. Siaf, maybe. He apparently had been putting propaganda into some of his artwork. Now, who's got a good handle on this story?
Well, when you say handle, have I been overexposed to it for the past 2 weeks?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, it's their Easter. I mean, the definition of what an Easter egg means has evolved so much over time. It used to be an Easter egg was, you know, I had to learn the little tricks on the video game to find the cheats. And then it became stuff that was hidden on a DVD. And now it's just in jokes or messages that are right there in front of you that you need somebody to take you by the hand and point out to you. So yeah, there was at least one. I thought there was more than one image, but he has a passage from the Quran that Colossus is wearing in one panel. And then there's also another visual reference, I think, Chris is pointing out
something
to me.
So there's a visual reference to right next to Kitty Pryde's head, there's the word jewelry. And so it's focused on the word Jew next to the leader of the X-Men, who is Jewish. Hmm. And then there's a couple numbers here, 212 and the 51 on a character shirt.
Yep.
So that's like the first one. But then there's also this one that can be a 50-50, could be, could not. But Marvel's changing it anyway, where Nightcrawler, who is a Catholic German, is hitting a baseball, but it looks like he's hitting Kitty Pryde's head. Who's Jewish?
Because she just is sitting in the bleachers and
right.
Like that.
Yeah. So they're gonna edit that.
I didn't catch any of that stuff.
Yeah. But so I would like to undermine what all of this was saying. It would be much more interesting if the book was good in the first place.
I agree.
Boring.
I'll be reviewing the book a little bit later on. And the thing is that you know, the book at present is going for quite a bit on the secondary market because of all this hoopla.
Really?
Yep.
Well,
we couldn't sell our copies.
We'd love to see those sales in the store.
Yeah,
I'm sure you would. But that peak is probably already over. They were probably selling pretty high for a week, anyway, we can talk about the book later. G. Willow Wilson had some great comments on her blog, and I posted it to our discussion group. She puts it pretty succinctly because not only is she a brilliant writer, but she's also a scholar, and she's done her very best to run interference for women and people of the Muslim faith. And she does it in a very practical, down-to-earth, and caring way. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't call the guy out. She just basically says... Well, she also talks about how this came about. And what I think is interesting is that, you know, we in the States and we in Seattle, we forget this is a whole other world. We forget there's a whole other world of comic book readers out there of different faiths and different walks of life. And I was kind of taken aback by the discovery that this book hit the stands in Indonesia before it got to us. So that was kind of interesting. I'm like, oh, we probably should be mindful. Actually, looking in the mirror, Cole, should be mindful of how we touch people with our art beyond our borders, and how he's basically talking about an issue. Syaf is talking about an issue in his home country that, yeah, is similar to the stuff we're dealing with here at home, but also comes, if you've read Willow's discussion, from their particular reading of a passage in the Quran.
Translation.
Right. Mm-hmm. That she is adamantly disagrees with and says is essentially wrong. Mm-hmm. So, and I admire her gusto.
She has very strong words for him.
Yep.
And I think that, I mean, just if you're working for mainstream superhero titles, it's beyond unprofessional.
To be
putting your own things in there. And it is very foolish because, you know, you get caught and you'll have
it's selfish, it's foolish, and she made a really good point. It's like, well, he's not going to be relevant at all. And his career is over, mm-hmm. and he did a dumb thing. And so long, so sad.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Chris?
It's not just mainstream comics. It's Disney.
The
slender lawyer man is like already appeared before him with his suitcase from the Eldritch suitcase,
mm-hmm.
releasing him. So it's just,
I kind of don't want that to be real.
It is Disney, so.
I know.
It is.
So they probably already made the contract with the devil.
Yeah.
So
So don't put, you know, political imagery in in your contract.
Or if you're not going to sway anybody, you're just going to ruin your career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just find the right publisher to do it at as well.
Yeah, if you want to do that, this is just not the platform.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Form for that. So, yeah, that's where the problem was.
But there was some hate speak to it, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, if you look at his Wikipedia page, but the Wikipedia page devoted to him, he's just really, really good at putting his foot in his mouth. You know,
I think some of that might also be, unfortunately, his English isn't great all the time. I was reading some of his Facebook page, and it's just like, we're missing a couple words here or something. So I think there's like a double case of just like, maybe the English is missing him in some spots.
It's all about some really tragic mistranslations of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But we have copies, so please come in and buy them.
Yeah. Tons and tons.
Marvel is correcting some of the pages. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that the first runs might increase in value once they correct those pages?
Temporarily. It might just be this flash in the pan right now.
Apparently
and
not,
then
because
people are going to forget that it existed later.
There was a issue of Wolverine years ago where the letterer misunderstood the script. And instead of saying the killer Sabretooth, he said Sabretooth.
Mm-hmm.
So for a hot minute, that was a thing that people cared about and charged extra for, and now no one remembers it happened.
Yeah,
I mean, in our day, in our current days of what is the crisis of the hour,
mm-hmm.
This won't last that much longer, I think.
Okay.
So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, y'all. Well, that is the news we were able to cover, and if we miss talking about something that you want to hear us talk about, then email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, let's move on to Book Report, and then Chris Cassell, let's start with you.
Since we're talking X-Men, I will talk about X-Men Blue.
Excellent.
So this is the sister title to X-Men Gold, and it is by Colin Bunn, who I do love his book Sixth Gun, but I do find that most of his superhero stuff is okay. And the art is shared between Jorge Molina and Matteo Buffagni. Bavagani. And this is the time-displaced kid X-Men. So it's young Scott, young Iceman, young Henry, young Jean, young Warren. Mm-hmm. And I guess they found out that they tried to put the kids back in time, but they Star Trek'd it, and now there's the kids are already back in time. These are now new people or copies or whatever you want to call them.
The timeline diverged.
The timeline diverged. And so they're stuck here for good. And I think this is their way around not resurrecting Scott and Jean. It was interesting. I was talking to somebody else and like they like these characters, but they don't consider them those characters. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's happened a lot in the X-Men history. When Grant Morrison did his run, I think a lot of people liked the books and the stories, but they hated the characters because they didn't read like Scott or Hank or anybody. And so I think this might suffer from that. Now, unfortunately, one of the characters reads exactly like he should, and that's Iceman, and I've always hated Iceman because he's a whiner. And he even says, hey, I'm the team whiner. I'm like, oh, great, you got that right. It's okay. It's decent superhero action, solid artwork. The second half of the story is a bit more interesting because they're introducing another character about to show up. It's going to make things a lot more confusing because they're bringing alternate realities into this time travel stuff.
Already?
Well, if you look in the back, they have Generation X from the 90s. They have the alternate future X-Men, and they have Professor X, and you're like, oh, man.
But are there Wendigos in there?
There are a Wendigo or two in here.
Well, all right. Well, Nicole will be happy because there's Wendigos.
There's a Juggernaut and a Black Tom Cassidy, which is nice to see them back together again. But at the flip side, the last time I saw them, Black Tom murdered a child that made Juggernaut really sad, and I guess they forgave each other. I don't know.
So just to qualify, not a Tom Cassidy who's black. That's the character's name, Black Tom Cassidy.
Yes. Yes. Sorry. Yes. Yes. Yes.
See how that could be confusing.
Yeah. Well, there was a slight caesura in his comment. I'm like, I just want to qualify.
Oh, yep. Yeah. It's fine, but I think the main problem with the X-Men these days is that nobody can tell who the heck the X-Men are. They're a mess, and they're kind of boring. I don't want to insult Colin Bunn because I love Six Gun, but when you're doing a relaunch that's supposed to save one of your flagship titles, you should put some big names on it. And unfortunately, most of these names attached to both these books are not big names. I don't think there's a big loss in Siaf leaving because he's not a great artist. I mean, he's fine. He's a fill-in artist to me.
Right.
He's not a rock star.
He's not a rock star.
By any means.
And I don't, you know, I usually hate the idea of like trying to say like, oh, but you need a rock star. But it's just like, for the marketing purposes of relaunching your flagship title, you needed to go big. Yeah. And you went kind of meh, you know.
Yep.
You got something out. It feels like these were all rushed to me.
How many X-Men color titles are there?
Just the two.
Those are the original colors of the original costumes. Blue and gold.
And the 90s, they had the blue team and the gold team, so they're hearkening to nostalgia for the 90s.
There's that too.
But then, so they are launching like six or seven other books. There's Weapon X, there's Generation X, there's Jean Grey, there's Iceman, there's Cable. So they're trying to get it back out there. This was supposed to be the big relaunch, and I think it's probably doing okay in sales. I just don't know how long it's going to have any momentum.
And I know that there's a lot of skeptical X-Men fans that are
skepticism.
Skepticism that are not sure what to do with these titles either. Like, do I care? Which is a problem, because that's the people that you want to get back. That's the audience that you need to pull back in.
Yeah, I had one subscription customer who I consider is like a big X-Men person, and they just sent me like, "Oh, please cancel X-Men Blue," and then they then they added like some X or a Image title instead. It's like, that's what's gonna happen.
Yep.
You know, leaky sales. Go to another publisher.
Yep.
Cool. All right, X-Men Blue. Thanks, Chris. Nicole, what do you got for us?
So I read The Old Guard issue number one by Greg Rucka and Leandro Fernandez, colors by Daniela Miwa. So this, just like a Greg Rucka title, is like, it's a strong female protagonist. She's also queer, and she's also immortal, it seems like. The first pages were actually really interesting because they cast the protagonist a lot in like silhouette, and there's a play with colors to denote different time frames that she's lived through. So she's been killed and she's, you know, time and time again, she's lived many, many lives in so many ways. And she is so effing tired of it, apparently. That's in the book itself. So mature readers, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it follows. So the problem is it does get a little confusing for me as to who's doing what, but it seems like she is contracted to do some big job with a team of her choosing. And she goes in, and there's another team that's also there doing stuff. And they get in a whole mess of things because there's lots of guns, and, you know, guns put holes in people. And towards the end of it, it seems that team, whoever survived, seems to be getting whatever chemical, magical, whatever thing imbued in them so they can become immortal. So there's like a new generation of immortal warriors that are out to do some sort of job that might be in the Middle East or something, and it might be shady business. It might be like a black ops thing. It might be something along those lines. So some of the panel work, some of the visualization was very confusing to denote who the characters were, what was actually happening in the action sequences. So that was a huge problem for me in the flow of the narrative. The general premise is okay. It actually read a little bit more Warren Ellis-y to me, like a Warren Ellis female, a little bit more. And I think just because she was so done with everything, and every Warren Ellis character is like so on the verge of done with life.
I'm one day away from retirement.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but like angrier and full of more whiskey. So I mean, it was interesting, but again, confusing. So I think that this one might read better in a trade format, because you might be able to get more context around the story, wrap your head around more of it. So overall, it was interesting, but I'd need to give it more to be able to see if it was something that I really truly liked, and to see if maybe the art can flesh out a little bit. I know this is a series that Greg Ruck is pretty passionate about. He sent a little email out to everybody being like, look at my comic, please, and I know that y'all are busy, but please. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, he's a name, you know, in a lot of regards, and for him to go out, I think, like, he's feeling this one a lot.
Yep.
It's, you know, if you like Greg Rucka ladies, you'll probably like this, because it's another Greg Rucka lady. So
Whiteout.
There you go. It's that was a woman from Whiteout.
Great book.
Queen and Country.
Did you read Whiteout?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, I can't recommend Whiteout. There's actually a film of it, but tough broad running a police officer running a...
Is she queer?
She could be. Yeah. It's not really a part of the... maybe not. Do you remember what happens in Whiteout? She's a police officer at the
Antarctica.
Solving a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. And there's a film adaptation of it that's really lame, that does not do the comic book justice at all.
Oh. Alien versus Predator. That's a murder in the Arctic.
It's a pretty good story. Actually. It's and there were two books,
it's like,
right?
Kate Beckinsale in that movie. There's two comics, and then it turns into Queen and Country, sort of.
Yes, and Queen and Country was another great book that I eventually let go of. But
I mean, the only Greg Rucka lady is pretty much Batwoman for me.
Okay.
I haven't really filled out my repertoire of the Greg Rucka, but
well, as far as male storytellers go, he knows his lady types well.
I think he knows his tough lady types well. Okay. You know, if you like a tough lady type,
he settles on one archetype.
Yeah, I mean, he's through and through on one type of lady.
Like, she's going to be military. Yep. She's going to be a cop, ATF, something.
Something like that.
And that's all good, especially, you know, when he's really into a good crime story.
Yeah.
It's just that's always it. When he did a run of Wolverine, guess what? There was like an ATF agent shadowing him. That was just like a sexy Latina lady or something.
Okay.
It's just like, that's kind of what he does. When he's doing Adventure Time, there was a police lady cop who had a crush on Superman and kept following him. So it's just like, I like how he does it. Adventure Comics.
I was like, I remember that episode. Right.
I was like, wow, it's late. An amazing Adventure Time.
Yes. Yes. We should just write our own comic right now.
We should.
Yes. But
it's all about the mashup, guys. It's all about the mashup.
So it's just every time I do read a book, and it's just like, which branch of the police do you work for?
I forgot about that.
It doesn't mean it's bad. It's just after a while, it's just like, maybe I want him to do just a normal lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just a woman who's not a police officer.
It's just like, you know, any writer that you might follow has that sort of like person they like. Like mm-hmm. Sean Phillips, you're always going to see that redheaded guy mm-hmm. that he always draws that may or may not have like emotional or, you know, addiction problems.
With the weird nose, with the weird bridge of his nose. Yeah. It's got the cross hatching on it.
Jim Starlin always has a beefy space guy that's a purple or blue.
Yep.
You know, he's always got a dark side Thanos. And when he couldn't do either of them, he made a new guy who was a beefy guy. Mm-hmm. So that's his, he likes beefy guys.
Yep.
So you know what you're going to get when you get a Greg Rucka title.
Right.
Yeah.
And if that's what you want, it's going to totally fulfill.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Nicole. The Old Guard. Check it out for Greg Rucka's stereotypical lady. All right. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm doing the other half of the color sequence here that Chris talked about. I'm reviewing X-Men Gold, written by Mark Guggenheim. And, of course, Ardian. Is it Ardian? Sayaf? I can't remember how to pronounce his first. He's already forgotten. Yeah, Ardian Sayaf, I got it right, kind of. So this is basically, after so many years of X-Men, what is one of the most annoying things about X-Men comic books is that it kind of becomes your fantasy football mutant book.
Yeah.
And who can we put together in these books to help it sell better? And that's basically what this is. But at least they acknowledge what they're doing, because in the back of this, the letter from Guggenheim basically says blobbity 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 blah, but and then he says basically we're going back to go forward, and he's totally aiming to appeal to people like me who grew up in the 80s reading the X-Men comic books, who don't really handle change well. I think I handle change quite well, thank you. But that's what this book is. And they're not making any apologies about the fact that we're just going old school X-Men. And unlike Blue in the back of Gold, there is a historical appendices of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Do you
six
think you
pages.
Could accurately condense X-Men history with 6 pages?
Well, and this is only the pages that relate to the characters that are the fantasy football characters that are in the book.
So that's how they did it.
Yeah. And it is, you know, like 3-point type. And I'm reading this, and here's the sad thing. It's like, there's Chris Claremont, Dave Cockrum illustrations. There's John Byrne. I'm like, yep, read all those. Oh, look, it's Old Home Week. I'm bored. So
they take any risks, do you think?
No risks whatsoever. They said, you know, it's like, oh, hey, cool, we're going to fight Terax the Tamer. He's a fun bad guy.
Oh, yes.
Chris is imaginarily squeezing
You haven't read this?
No, I read it.
Oh.
No. Terex, so this is...
He's a Fantastic Four bad guy.
We can talk about like all the political stuff, which is much more important, but what actually killed me on this book was my in-the-weeds nerdism of like, Terex is a Herald of Galactus who blows up planets.
Right.
On a bad day, he blows up cities.
Right.
You beat him in 3 pages.
Beat him in 3
pages? You threw a Wolverine at him, and then you hit him with lightning, and you're like, that does it. And you're like, what?
Yep.
And they even make a joke like, is he dead? I thought he was dead. And you're like, well, so it just felt like they threw somebody in there.
Yeah.
And that's what most
bad
of this
guy du jour.
Yeah. And then it just turned into a talkie book.
It did turn into
where they complain about stuff.
Yep.
And they tell you about how they're getting back to basics. And I
should have put Bendis.
It's not a lie. Yeah. They are going back to about the most basic thing they can, and sadly it's really boring.
Yeah.
And the fact that they think that there's still an audience for this that's going to buy this book on a regular basis is the real tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
At least I actually want to read X-Men Blue. That sounds like stuff I actually care about.
More stuff happened. There was an actual comic book that happened.
Yes.
there was an actual superhero comic where people fought, things happened, and words were said. This one was just like blah 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 blah.
A quarter of this book is. But here's the interesting thing, though, gang, is that for a company that has become as self-conscious about its legacy as DC has, I thought it was interesting that they did devote this kind of energy to the appendices in here.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the nail in the coffin for this book and books like it and the readership, but they acknowledge that that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we've talked a lot on the show about how that particular readership is not expanding. They're dwindling. They're the white, cisgendered, privileged male readers who get
they
really grumpy.
They also still pay money for comics.
They do,
like,
but
they're still an audience.
You're not growing an audience, though. They're still no. there, but if any, but you know,
if you can't even get that audience,
there you go.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
By the way, both these gold and blue books were $5 each.
Yep, and that's not cheap.
Worth mentioning.
Yep. Wow. So yeah. I will probably. I hate to say this. I will probably read these for a little while, and then I'll probably get annoyed and forget I even read them because, you know, deteriorating memory loop.
Start that
spreadsheet. What were we talking about again? Yes.
I don't remember.
Oh. Already, honey?
Yeah,
is your brain going bad already?
Oh. Alrighty. X-Men Gold.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you, Cole.
You're welcome.
Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at The Panel Jumper.com, where you can check out the latest episode, Boy Wonder Years, parts 1 and 2, and both endings. And that's going to be exciting. And I'm going to upload that tonight when I get home. And I said that I'm going to say that next week because we recorded next week's show first.
Okay.
Anyway.
Wow.
I'm glad you're tracking that. Right
now. You can check it out right now.
Stop what you're doing.
By also the Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Find us online, perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts. And it's quiz time. This week, our questions come to us from Mr. Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
So as many may know, I'm really enjoying a lot of comics about food these days.
Yeah, man.
And so this one is the Iron Chef of quiz time. This Justice League member, who is generally known more for his womanizing ways, his mastery of arranged weapons, and his uber-liberal political views, is also known for his stupendous chili recipes. Who is this?
Cole Hornaday.
Would that be Green Arrow?
It is. Yep. They actually printed those chili recipes in some comics.
Wow.
They're really hot.
Was that the Mike Grell era?
I think some of it was later, but they also made those like 70s cookbook things, and I think they've made one for them.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, along with the swimsuit issues.
Yeah. Yep. Played by the late Brock Peters, Captain Benjamin Sisko's father, Joseph Sisko, owned a restaurant in New Orleans where he insisted his children would prepare their food instead of using a replicator. Known for making a fierce jambalaya, what was the name of his restaurant? I've said the name twice already.
In the question?
Yes.
Can you read the question again?
Captain Peters. I don't know.
Sisko's.
Sisko.
Oh.
He's not a very inventive entrepreneur.
And he remember those episodes.
Busy
too.
Making jambalaya. Co-created by Anthony Bourdain and journalist Joel Rose, this character is a renegade and ruthless sushi chef known to decapitate patrons who dare request a California roll or who stir wasabi into their soy sauce.
I love California
rolls.
Who is this?
Get Giro.
Giro from Get Giro. Yes. Yep.
Ah.
You didn't know that?
I couldn't remember it, yeah.
This bushy eyebrowed, toque blanche wearing character once tried to kill another beloved children's TV character during a Christmas special. Who is this?
Oh, the Swedish Chef?
Yes.
Yeah!
Bort. He tried to kill Big Bird because he was like, Big Bird! And this one is so far deep in the weeds, but it made me happy, so butter. This Green Lantern of Sector 3443 is the manager of Oa's cafeteria and is one of the most respected culinary masters in the universe. His many attempts to recreate Terran cuisine have been constantly derided by Guy Gardner. What is his name?
Don't look at me.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Greet, G-R-E-E-T, the alien.
Wow.
So,
all right.
There are actually not that many chef characters, so it took me a while to put this one together.
You didn't do the Fin Fang Foom
I thought of doing it, and I apparently blacked out.
Well, that's okay. I mean, this was great.
What, Fin Fang Foom was a chef at some point?
Yeah, at some point, Reed Richards had a shrinking ray, and he shrunk Fin Fang Foom and made him the Chinese chef, in-house chef of the Baxter Building.
Because that's not racist at all.
Yeah.
All
right.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm going to give you 10 points for originality, 9 points for plating, and 10 points for presentation.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right.
Nice job.
And, well, that is quiz time. That is our show. And thank you for listening. And we will see you next week.